This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. To understand what life is like for a woman in Iran, you could turn to the fiction of my guest Nahid Rocklin. She rebelled against the traditional role of women, went to the United States for a college education in the 60s, fell in love with an American, and decided to stay. She was last in Iran visiting her family just a few weeks ago. Her first novel, Foreigner, published in 1978, was about a young Iranian woman living in Boston who returns to Iran on vacation. V.S. Naipaul described it as foreshadowing the hysteria that was to come. Anne Tyler called it remarkable. Rocklin's next novel, Married to a Stranger, was about an Iranian woman who convinces her parents to let her choose her husband instead of submitting to an arranged marriage. Now Rocklin has a collection of short stories called Veils. After living in the United States for about 30 years, Rocklin writes her books in English, but still writes about Iranians. I asked her if her books are published in Iran.
No, none of my books are published there, partly because when Foreigner got published, that was under the Shah regime, someone tried to get it published for me there, but then they found that I had to change it almost completely, which was strange, because Foreigner, by the end of the story, is very favorable towards Iran, in that the character in it reconsider her whole attitude towards the American culture and finds peace in Iran. Even then, they thought that the fact that, like, I drew a picture of streets as being kind of unsanitary and a lot of things like that in the book, they wanted me to change it and make it almost like a travelogue, that every single thing there is just great. And so I didn't feel it's worth it for me to try to make all those changes. And since that happened, I haven't tried again since to get anything translated there and published.
In your novel, Married to a Stranger, there's the main character, the young woman in it, hears a sermon from a loudspeaker in a nearby mosque. And the sermon goes something like this: a woman who is guilty of lewdness before or after marriage ought to be confined to the house until death takes her. And then in your novel, The Foreigner, the young woman in that novel is so sexually fearful and uninformed that after kissing and holding hands with two boys, she's terrified that she's no longer a virgin. So she goes to a gynecologist to find out whether she's still a virgin or not. I'm wondering if you grew up in some form of sexual terror because you were as uninformed as these characters were.
Yeah, there is a great deal of sexual terror in Iran, in that men and women are supposed to be completely separate in every respect before they get married, unless they're your close relations, like your brother or father or uncle, that's okay. But you're supposed to never, exchange anything personal with the opposite sex or touch or anything. And virginity has a really important value for men. And, there are a lot of women that, if on the night of their marriage they're found out that they're not virgins, they're really in trouble. So a lot, like some women who may have lost their virginity anyway, there is actually like a process they go through to make it seem like they're virgins, like through surgery or something.
Were your parents very strict with you?
Yes. Like, for instance, they would always be watching to see if I'm talking on the phone on the other side. They had, to make sure it's a female. Or if I went out to even visit a friend, there was always we had this living servant. He always had to, go with me. And that was the same with my sisters. Always we had to go out with a chaperone, kind of, like with somebody to make sure we are not meeting a boy or anything.
Did you ever have a boyfriend?
Actually, because I was not always happy with the values, I wouldn't call it a boyfriend in a real sense, like having dates and going to movies and things like that, because that just wasn't possible. But I used to sometimes meet boys after high school.
If you had stayed in Iran, would your parents have tried to arrange a marriage for you?
Yes. That's what happened to most of my sisters. I have a lot of sisters, and that's what happened to them. Though often the arrangement comes after two people already have met each other somehow or the other, and then they go and tell their parents about each other. So it's not always quite as, as arranged as it seems. Like, sometimes the children have something to say about it.
Were your sisters married through a matchmaker, or did they marry people who they found themselves?
Three of them was through matchmaking, and only one of them through someone she met herself, and then my parents tried to match them.
How did the marriages work out?
The ones that we were matched did not work out. The one that she picked herself has worked out better.
The ones that didn't work out, did they end in divorce, or are they still together in spite of it?
No, they all ended up in divorce.
What's divorce like in Iran?
Well, the divorce is possible, but it's at a huge disadvantage to the woman in that, unlike here, the custody of the child automatically goes to the husband. And, they have this, the woman has no right to any money whatsoever from her husband. So if she's the one who initiates the divorce, she has to be prepared that she's going to get no money and she has to give up her children, basically. So it's a very harsh thing. But even then, a lot of people get divorced. Like in my own family alone, almost every one of my brothers and sisters has been divorced. So it's people still do it.
The husband keeps custody even if they're divorcing because he was cruel to his wife?
Right. They still do that because laws automatically are on the men's side. That's just how it is.
Did you want to get married when you were living in Iran?
Well, I was a very restless, rebellious kind of adolescent. And the last thing on my mind was to get married in a traditional way. I just wanted to do something really, which had to do with my own, my own desires, my own choices. So at that time, I wasn't focused so much on getting married as somehow or the other getting myself somewhere where I could be, choose my own ways better. And I always, because of that, thought of the United States as a place that I could be happy. And since my brothers had come here before me, I managed to come here also, managed to convince my parents to send me here.
Your mother was married when she was 12 years old and she started having children at the age of 15. Did that ever seem very young to her, or was that just typical? Yeah.
Actually, in this visit to Iran, I found that she was even younger. She was 9 years old when she got married.
Wow.
And she had a baby when she was 13 or maybe 14, but she was pregnant at 13.
Well, did you talk to her about what it felt like to get married at the age of 9?
I think at that time, it never crossed their mind that whether it's good or bad. It was like going and living with somebody else instead of with their own parents. And a lot of people in Iran married their own relatives. And my father was a second cousin to my mother. And it didn't seem either shocking or strange to her, I guess. And she just accepted it because that's how things were at the time.
So your mother married your father through an arranged marriage?
Right, but they knew each other because they were cousins.
Now, you were actually brought up by two sets of parents. This is, I think, a really interesting and very unusual story. Your aunt apparently was unable to conceive, and your grandmother wanted your aunt to have a child, so she suggested that your mother's next child go to your aunt, and that next child was you.
Right. It wasn't really my grandmother who suggested it, but she's the one who took me to my aunt. What happened is that my aunt was always trying to get pregnant. Her husband, the first one, had been like more than twice her own age, and he died quickly, and she couldn't become pregnant. So she always begged my mother if she could raise one of her children. And finally, when my mother was pregnant with me, my aunt said, whatever this one is, why don't you just let me take her with me? And so when I was born, my grandmother took me from my mother. They were living in a different town from my aunt, to my aunt to raise me. And I was with my aunt until I was about 8, 9 years old. And I was really, really happy with her. And then one day my father just appeared in my school and just took me away. And I just felt my aunt or myself had no choice in this whatsoever, because in Iran, adoption is not legal. And not only that, women are really scared of men. So my aunt, being in a very vulnerable position, she really couldn't stand up to my father. And so I was, from then on until I came to the United States, I was living with my parents. And my aunt, though, did come and stay with us almost 6 months out of the year. So it wasn't a complete separation.
Must have been kind of confusing for you as a child to figure out where your loyalty was and who your parents really were.
Yeah, well, it was very confusing, but my loyalties were very clear towards my aunt, because I just was really happy with her. And when I came to live with my parents, I felt absolutely miserable. For one thing, because they had all these children, and I didn't, all of a sudden, I wasn't the focus of attention anymore. Like before, I had been an only child, and now all of a sudden, I had to be with these brothers and sisters that my mother was obviously much more attached to, because she hadn't raised me. So I felt like a real outsider when I went to live with my own parents. I just couldn't view them as my own parents. So I wasn't so much confused as kind of upset. I was really upset all the time.
Were there big cultural differences between your aunt's home and your parents' home?
Yes, in that my aunt was very old-fashioned and very religious, and my parents were much more westernized, and they lived in this town, Ahvaz, which was, it was the center of a lot of oil refinery employees from foreign countries. And so it was a cosmopolitan kind of a city. And so my parents were much more modern in many ways. And even though I like to be modern myself, I still was much more attached to my aunt. And, you know, she was just more affectionate towards me. I guess maybe that's it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Iranian emigre writer Nahid Rakhlin, and she's lived in the United States for about 30 years. She's the author of two novels and a new collection of short stories called Veils. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Iranian writer Nahid Rakhlin. I always wonder, for women who grow up in a culture where women do not have equal rights, and where there is no feminist movement, how does the awareness strike that this is unjust and that it isn't right and that you want something different for yourself? So let me ask you how it struck you.
Well, I think what happened with me is that, first of all, I was a real avid reader of foreign books. There was a bookstore in our town which had a huge number of books in translation from every country, like the United States, Russia, France. So since I was reading all these books, I knew that in other cultures, things are very different from in Iran. And plus the fact that there were two movie houses in our town that always showed foreign movies because of the foreign population there. So I was exposed to other ways of living and thinking for women than my parents or all the people, you know, all the other Iranian families around me wanted their children to be like. So, like, I was aware of other ways of life. And I think a lot of other females my own age who had the same attitude as I did, that's how they got their ideas, through books or foreign movies, or maybe relatives who had been abroad and came back. Things like that. It wasn't, you know, like in some countries like Saudi Arabia, people are much more insulated from the outside world. But in Iran, it's not like that. There is a great deal of exposure to foreign countries and foreign way of thinking and looking at things.
I think what you've just described helps explain why so many countries censor so much literature and film.
Right. They take all those things so seriously because they feel that the written word or, you know, what you see on movies have a strong effect on people. Sometimes maybe they take it even more seriously, like they interpret every single word as if it's like, you know, gospel truth or something. And so you're right. That's part of the reason they have this censorship. It's just a way of keeping people, you know, in a certain way all the time.
There's a story in which a daughter tells her mother she wants to go to a university, and the mother says, "What for? How will that help you diaper a baby?" Did you get that kind of reaction from your parents when you expressed an interest in going to college?
Well, my mother never used words like that, but a lot of my relatives would say that. Like, they would say, "What's the point? That doesn't help you with diapers exactly." My mother was too preoccupied with other things to express herself that way. She would more say, like, what my father said, that it's a waste of money to, you know, send children abroad and that kind of thing. But my father finally, though, didn't quite mean it, because, like, he was so happy I was doing well at school and he was willing to send me to a university.
When you left Iran in 1961 to come to the States to go to college, which college did you go to?
I went to a very small all-women's college called Lindenwood College. It was in St. Charles, Missouri. And it probably was the worst place in some ways for a foreign student like myself to go to, in that it was a finishing school and it was full of Southern Belle type students who had never met a foreigner, period. And in fact, the reason this college had a very good scholarship for a few foreign students every year was to expose the other students to foreign students. So they treated the few foreign students who were there well, but like oddities, like someone very strange.
What did you make of Southern Belles?
At first, I was really fascinated by them because they reminded me of females in some of the movies I had seen in Iran. Like, there was American movies. They reminded me of them a little bit. So at first, I was fascinated by them. But very quickly, I realized how distant I was from them. And so I felt really isolated in that college.
Now, how did you get from there to New York?
Well, my mother was... at the time, see, the reason I went to that college partly was because my brother was at Washington University, which is right near that college I went to. And then my brother had come to New York City for his internship. He was a medical student. And my mother was visiting him, and so I came to New York to visit my mother. And while I was in New York, I registered at this course at the New School. And I met my husband there, and then I decided to stay on in the United States.
What was your parents' reaction when you and your husband-to-be decided to get married?
Well, my parents at that time, I think they realized if I had stayed in Iran and married someone they arranged for me, I would just get everybody into trouble, because I wasn't a very accepting person in that sense of the things they wanted me to do. And I think at some level they were a little bit relieved that I found someone on my own and I wasn't going to give them any trouble.
What effect do you think that the revolution in Iran had on your family? Do you think that they were happier under the Shah, under Khomeini, or under, you know, Rafsanjani now?
See, I think things became very confusing for them, because right after Khomeini came into power, almost quickly after that, the war started. So obviously, they were all absolutely miserable while the war going on.
The Iran-Iraq War.
Right. And that lasted for so many years that, you know, they were under a lot of hardship and fear and things like that. So they never had the chance to really evaluate the revolution itself, because the war came on so quickly. And so I have a feeling because of that, they all were yearning for the more peaceful period when the Shah was there. That's just, as I said, has nothing to do with the revolution, but with the war. Mm-hmm. And right now, it seems like people are more content, because when I went there was a good feeling in the air. Like, I wasn't aware of like grimness or unhappiness on people's faces or what they said. I think right now Iran is going through a better period in that, you know, like people are waiting to see if the economy improves. They have hope in this president. So they're kind of hopeful right now after such a long period of war.
You haven't lived in Iran for 30 years yet. Many of your stories are set there. Do you feel like you're writing a lot about memories?
I think when you leave a country which is very different from the one you end up in, like the United States and Iran are such different countries, it's very easy to become very preoccupied by your memories. It's like, it's almost like you have left who you were behind, you know, like that was a different life. You were such a different person, or you were forced to be such a different person. And because of that, there is this tension, or at least that's how I feel. There is always this tension inside of me that what happened to that other person. And because of that, I'm much more intensely involved with characters coming from Iran and that setting, mostly because it expresses more something inside of myself than if I wrote about things going on here.
Do you hope that one day you'll be able to have your books published in Iran?
I think it would be nice, but only because I gave up on it so long ago. It's not that much on my mind right now. I mean, it would be nice, obviously, the more people it reaches, the better. But, I mean, it's not like a burning desire for me right now to try to do anything about it.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you. It was fun talking to you.
Naheed Rockland's new collection of short stories is called Veils. It's published by City Lights. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.